everyone. Welcome to the Community Geek Podcast. My name is Katie Kobe, and I'm the head of training for Feverbee Limited. I train community managers in the art of community building using proven social science techniques. In the Community Geek Podcast, I'll share tools and techniques that you can use in your daily community management efforts. Listen weekly to get new tips, industry news, and hear stories from guest practitioners to help you become the best community manager in the business. Make sure you subscribe for free updates and get all the resources mentioned in the podcast in the show notes. Show notes are published weekly at communitygeek.com/podcast. Here with me today is Ben Munoz, founder of Ben's Friends. Ben's Friends is a network of 36 different support communities for people affected with rare diseases. In 2006, Ben himself suffered a rare form of a stroke related to an aneurysm. And unable to find the support he needed when he was looking on the internet during his lengthy recovery, he created the patient community called avmsurvivors.org. Since then, his mission has been to make sure that no survivor of a rare disease is ever without the support network they need online. So welcome, Ben. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So to get started and kick things off, I was doing a bit of research about Ben's Friends for the last couple of days in preparing to chat with you. And I have to say, it's a really, really incredible community with a powerful story behind it. Can you share a bit about that experience of, you know, going through the motions of like creating the community and, you know, what prompted you to start it to give a little background for everyone else?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the starting point is every community begins with a need. And here was my need. In 2006, I was 29 years old and I had a stroke, and I didn't have any symptoms before. I didn't run in the family. It was just out of nowhere. And I was rushed to the emergency room. I had emergency brain surgery. I had a couple of years after the brain surgery to recover. And, man, what a life-changing experience. And so, immediately after the surgery and the stroke, I had a lot of support from my friends and family, and they were great, but still I felt alone. And it was, there was a lot of emotional stuff that you had to deal with. The fear, what's going to happen next is what I'm feeling emotionally, what other people have felt. Mm-hmm. And doctors were around, and doctors were helping with the treatment and the recovery, but the emotional side was missing. And so I have a software background. So what I did is I started a website. I did a little bit of research and, okay, what else is out there? There was not really anything for my specific rare form of stroke. Mm-hmm. But I did find some mailing lists, and they were okay. They were not really high traffic, really low traffic. And so I stumbled upon a website that let you create your own kind of community. It's named mm-hmm. because this is a long time ago, so it wasn't really that well known back then. So I started a community on Ning, and for the first month or two, it was me and maybe a few friends of mine just so it didn't look like a completely empty room. Mm-hmm. And eventually I started telling other people about it, spreading the word, and within a few months it got more active, and with a few months after that it got really active, and what became just a website of a few people became like a real family. And I was there blogging all the time. I was just spending so much time initially kind of ranting and venting my own frustrations and fears and just loneliness, and then when other people did the same, I would be there for them and they would be there for me. And so it just became like a really tight support. So that was AVM Survivors. That was the first community that we started. My friend Scott Orne, who I'd known from business school, he sent me a book called Tribes. And that was basically a blueprint. It was Tribes by Seth Godin. And it talked about a lot of what we were building here on this website. He said, this is amazing. You should consider starting other communities just like this for people with other rare diseases, and I will help you. So we did that. We started one for trigeminal neuralgia, which is a really extremely painful facial nerve condition. Mm-hmm. They call it a suicide disease because I think at least back then, maybe something like 50% of the people with the disease would commit suicide within 4 years.
Oh, how horrible.
Yeah, just terrible, terrible. A lot of them are misdiagnosed and just don't have people to help them when the days are the darkest. So we started that community, and then we also started one for ataxia, which is a cerebellum movement disorder, which people don't understand because I guess it's a little bit like cerebral palsy in that you have this movement disorder, so you have speech problems and mobility problems, but cognitively you're perfect. It's just like you're unable to move and to speak like other people, but you can think very clearly. There's nothing wrong with you, mentally, cognitively, but it's hard to see. So there's a lot of emotions around that and how they may feel maybe outsiders. And mm-hmm. So in community, they can connect with each other. So right. That was one community, 1, 2, 3. And then slowly we got more organized. We found some volunteers. We applied and were granted our 501c3 nonprofit status. And then today we're 36 communities, and combined over 100,000 unique visitors a month.
That's incredible. I mean, especially just over the last few years and seeing things grow and rise, and you know, with the more of the popularity of online communities and the online forums as a support tool, it's just really, really great to see how you've been able to grow in that way. So take me back to 2007. Then, you know, you just started this Ning network, and you know, it's you and a few of your friends. And how did you go about sort of like finding your first members in the community? Were there people that you had already known, maybe through your different like recovery programs that you reached out to? Did you post on like these other boards or anything? Like, how did you go about getting people to join?
Yeah, so I guess just like so I come from a business background, and so a lot of this stuff I could relate to mm-hmm. starting a company.
Uh-huh.
And in business, your first customer is your hardest. Your first cutting of customers are your hardest. And then after that, you build momentum and critical mass. And so those first 100 took a while. And it was just a lot of manual work. There's no magic formula, really. It was a combination of, if there's one thing that we did that had a really high impact, it was picking a domain name that had the disease in it. Mm-hmm. That probably was the one thing that helped us out, because if we had to start from scratch and in a highly competitive SEO area, then it would have been a lot more difficult. But these are rare diseases, so there's not that much competition to begin with. And we had the domain name with the disease inside of it, so that helped us out a lot. But still, yeah, I think if you just have that by itself, you're going to be on, I don't know, page 30 of Google searches.
Right.
And nobody's going to scroll past 30.
Right.
So you need something else. And so what we did is we went on bulletin boards, and we just found bulletin boards for strokes, aneurysms, anything that might have somebody who had AVM, because AVM is a rare form of stroke and somewhat mm-hmm. related to an aneurysm, close enough. And we just, hey, this is a website that I started, come check it out. And then, of course, I also told them who I was. I'm not, you know, that I wasn't, I wasn't a pharmaceutical company, and, you know, that I'm actually one of you, and I want you to join me, and so that we can help each other out.
Right. And I could imagine that like helps to build a lot of trust right there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think patients are really naturally skeptical
mm-hmm.
because they always think that someone is trying to sell them something. I think it's, I don't know, I've never really thought about why, but I just know that that's true. They're naturally skeptical. So when they understand that the person who started this was just like them and went through the same experiences as them, they're willing to trust you and invest time in your community, trying to find help for themselves and also helping other people. Yeah, so the trust is definitely trust and authenticity and credibility. We've seen We've been at this for 7 years, 7 8 years already, and we've seen other patient communities come and go. Some of them last a long time because they have a lot of funding behind them.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll last a long time, and maybe they can do a good job. But if you don't have that credibility and that passion, then I think it's gonna be just a matter of time until someone else comes along that does.
That makes a ton of sense. I was just writing down that note. It's funny what you say about, you know, patients sort of being naturally skeptical. The last couple of weeks, so my grandmother unfortunately had some medical issues happen, and we ended up in the hospital with her. And spending the last week or so in and out of the hospital with her, and, you know, trying to talk to doctors and nurses and understand what's going on, a lot of the times you're not getting information in a timely fashion. It may or may not be accurate. Like, one doctor will say one thing and another will say another. Or, you know, maybe even like the hospital staff doesn't have their lines of communication open enough. And so I can definitely empathize and see on the perspective of a patient, especially if you have more of like a long-term illness, and a disease that's, you know, so rare. Maybe like the doctors that they're working with don't have a ton of experience. I could definitely see why a lot of skepticism comes and takes place. And how did you go, I mean, in terms of building that trust, was it just, you know, like putting your bio up there, or did you like meet with people in person? Like, how did you get them to really believe that you are who you said you were?
I think one of the early things that we did was we created a video. So there's a 60-second animated video with a voiceover from me, with a little bit of background music, and we did that probably the first year or two, and we've kept it up since then. And that's basically just, here I am, here's what happened to me, here's why I started this nonprofit and these communities, and it helps bring all of us together. Thank you for your support. And we've sent that to anybody that we want to partner with. We put it up on the main website. And when we launch like a new community, and hopefully it launches with a moderator, and the moderator already has the disease, they already know that story and they already know where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And so they trust me. They trust me, and they're willing to put enormous amounts of energy into making this community of success, which means welcoming everybody, which means keeping spammers out, which means answering questions. And the only reason they would do that is if they trust the organization, which is basically, trust the organization and the people behind it, behind the scenes especially. Yeah.
Fair enough. I think that's interesting that video is a really a type of content that helps you to really connect. You have a lot of great types of content on the communities. Like, you do newsletters with member features, there's blog posts. Can you go into depth maybe a little bit more, like, around, you know, how you went about developing such a strong content strategy? Was it like trial and error? Where did you pick this stuff up from?
Our moderators and our members.
Mm.
There's not really been any strategic plan. I mean, we're not that kind of organization. We're just, we're not like a command and control, this is how it's going to be
mm-hmm.
type of organization. What we said, our motto is, we tell our moderators that the community, there are 36 of them, so it's kind of like the United States of America. We're all under one flag. That each state has its own governor, its own, well, there's not really a governor, but there's its own, like, Senate, and its own legislature, and its own, you know, citizens, and its own culture, too. So we tell our moderators, look, this is your community, we'll give you some guidelines, we'll maintain the website, guidelines as far as spam partnerships, we'll make sure to keep the light bill on, we'll keep the lights on, but, you know, how we'll have recommendations on what works best in other communities, but if you want to try different things out,
mm-hmm.
you're more than welcome to. Just let us know what works. And so that's what has led to all these different content that has worked so well. And they actually vary across different communities. For example, one of our communities, they have led by a really data-driven moderator who's got a PhD in science, and he's really data-driven. He's really well organized into research. And so on that community, that culture has more of a, here's a lot of resources. You spend so much time aggregating resources and curating resources. But on other communities, it's not like that. It's more of maybe you have online chat, and that's where things are. So there's no unified content strategy. It's mostly let's empower our moderators to experiment and figure out what works best for their community.
Very cool. And I would imagine by not having everything be so cookie cutter, it helps to continue to build that bond with, you know, the members sort of like trusting and really believing in the credibility and the authenticity of the organization as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I talk to the moderators and let them know that it's their community and we're just here to pay the light bill and to spread the word and take care of the logistics.
Very cool. So with moderators, when you guys decide to start a new community, is it usually like, does someone come to you and talk to you about it? Or, I mean, how does the whole, like, the moderator onboarding kind of process work and look like for you?
Yeah, I think for the most part, we have some senior moderators. Mm-hmm. We have about 200 volunteer moderators across all communities.
Wow.
We probably have about 10 senior moderators who have either been around a long time or have been involved in multiple communities and kind of get a more a higher level perspective, bird's eye view of what's going on. And so what they do is they keep an eye out for members who are just really, really involved, really spend a lot of time, really show a lot of compassion, are very friendly, are very helpful, and to ask them if they'd be interested in in the first step towards becoming a moderator, which is just saying hello to people when they join. So that's it for the beginning, is to greet them and make sure that they know where to find different resources and they feel like this like a family. Let them know that this is a family and just contact us if there's anything you need. And then a little bit of that. Some time as a greeter, and then they could become more familiar with what's involved. I think in the beginning, it could be a little bit more intimidating to be like, would you like to be a moderator? And then, I don't really have the experience. I don't have the time. It seems like a lot of pressure. So we just start out small. And then later, if they're like, okay, yeah, this is good. I can continue and maybe want to do more. Then we ask them and they get involved. And we have a separate community. So we have a patient community, but we have a second community, and it's private and it's just for moderators. And that's where they come, and we have some training materials for them, and we can ask questions about spammers or about, unfortunately in ours, it's a lot of emotional. So sometimes we have suicide crisis discussions about what do I do in this situation? And it's scary. But other moderators have more experience, and so they tell them, you should do this, or you should do that. Mm-hmm. Everything, even website issues. You talk about website issues there. So
that's nice.
That's like our, our White House, or not our White House, but our legislature.
Yeah, that's where they all meet. Moderator. That's Congress for you. That's really great, and it's good to give them a space and a place to be able to get help with what they're doing as well.
Oh, and because one more thing is they support the patients, mm-hmm. but they also support. And so when you're a moderator, especially in R, because it's very intensely emotional, that you can get exhausted and burnt out, mm-hmm. and you can't really show that on the community because you're supposed to be there for other people. So, but nobody's there for you. So on this moderator community, we're there for each other.
That's fantastic. it gives them a place where they can go and kind of like recharge and get back to the roots of what they're doing and why they're doing it. That's really cool. Well, what do you think has been, I guess, like the biggest sort of achievement related to your communities over the last 7 years? I mean, you guys have been featured in a ton of different publications and are doing some really great things, but what are you like most proud of?
Well, I'm not doing this for the publicity or the, any of that. What really brings it home to me is I remember how I felt when I was going through my recovery, and I'm cured now, so I don't have to worry about it, but for 2 years I was still in treatment or treatment/recovery, and so I remember what it felt like to be there, to be alone, to be scared, and it's not a good place to be. So when I hear that other people are there or were there, and that we helped them through that tough period, I mean, sounds cliche saying that, but it really is. Like that's why we all do it. And I think all the moderators and everyone involved, there's a board of directors, we all feel the same way. The reason we do it is because the thank you notes that we get, the videos, there's video testimonials that people send in when we ask them to, and they're really touching. They make your eyes water. And, that's our biggest accomplishment, are those thank yous.
Well, it's fantastic. I mean, you guys really are making a huge dent in the universe, so to speak. And, giving people, I was doing a podcast interview last week that'll come out on Monday. And one of the big takeaways for me was that the, person I was speaking with said, the worst thing in the world is to feel alone. Like the worst thing in the world is to feel like you have nobody there for you and that you're, completely isolated and by yourself. And it's so true. And the fact that you guys have been able to help all these people all over, definitely the United States, if not the world, help feel like less alone. I think that's just a really, really incredible and powerful achievement.
And it's really funny because it's not just social networks, because social networks, there's some social networks that make you feel more alone and make you feel worse about your life. And it's like Facebook, where you see everybody's on vacation and you're, working or you're just like, oh my God. And it's like, I feel like my life is a failure. And so, and then there's other communities that are the exact opposite that make you actually feel connected. So I'm happy to be part of one of those.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it's definitely not always like, roses and sunshine, that's for sure. What would you consider maybe some of the most challenging part of your journey in terms of, getting like this like nonprofit and like the communities going? What are sort of like your biggest lessons learned?
Well, for ours specifically is probably moderator burnout.
Yeah.
That's one that I worry about all the time because there's so many great moderators and that their hearts are in it, and that's never been questioned. But sometimes when you care so much about something, you put so much effort that you burn out. And so for ours, that's a concern. So I worry about that. That's a challenge. And so I do what I can to keep everybody's spirits up when they've had maybe a patient pass on or a patient like really reach out, and it can become overwhelming. So that's my biggest challenge. I don't know if that's going to be common among your audience, but
no, yeah. I mean, anyone who runs a community that is, based off of volunteers and a lot of your community building practices show that to be able to scale and be really powerful, regardless of what the common interest of the community is, you need to be able to scale, and volunteers are what help you do that. And so I think burnout is a very, very real issue in any sort of community. And with what you guys do, it's a different type of burnout, because it's like that, you're so emotionally invested that you are literally drained. And so I could see how like that's definitely a very real concern. So it might be a different type, but I think burnout is really important anytime when you're working with volunteers, making sure that you're not asking too much of them and that they're still getting what they need by participating with your group.
Yeah. And I would say, we just put that as part of your community strategy is to remember that they could be doing anything right now, but instead they're helping you out with your community. So let them always know that they're appreciated. And just always kind of that, keep that in mind.
Yeah.
To show your appreciation.
Makes sense. Is there anything special that you guys do for your moderators? I know it's hard, obviously, being a nonprofit, but like they have their own community. Do you do any sort of like, I don't know, like moderator awards or anything like that?
Yeah, we do. We do features in our newsletter. Mm-hmm. We do an interview. I think they like getting the note. We try once a year to send them a handwritten note. So I'll write 200 handwritten notes and send them all out. I think that's a nice, you know, nobody does handwritten notes anymore. I mean, email could be so much easier.
Right.
But I mean, it's an email. Anybody can send an email, but a handwritten note is nice to get. When I can and I'm in town, I'll have coffee with anybody who's available. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm traveling and I'm visiting, I'll find out if, you know, if you have any moderators that are available, have coffee with them and, share coffee and a hug and how are things going? Is there anything we can do better on the community? What can we, you know, what's working, what's not working?
Mm-hmm.
I think you know, that's something that I enjoy, and I think, you know, they like meeting me after having talked to me on the internet for a couple of years sometimes.
Absolutely. I mean, I've met some really good friends on the internet, so that's a really great way to look at it. Well, I mean, you typically right now focus primarily on the operations of everything. Any particular, like, resources? Like, you had mentioned Tribes by Seth Godin was a really great resource for you at the beginning. Are there any resources now, whether it's, you know, like books or different types of technology that you find really helpful?
What do we use on the back end? So we use Basecamp.
Okay.
Like tons of other companies out there. So we use Basecamp. We use our community software to actually manage the organization because we have the moderator community. We don't do too much of research to see what other people are doing. We found early on that when community building wasn't really a thing, we just tried whatever worked, and we tried everything and kept what worked and left behind what didn't work. And so when there weren't any resources back then, so we figured out what worked early on and we just stuck with that. Tribes is probably our blueprint for everything else. And then the day-to-day stuff and operations stuff, we kind of just built our own operations plan in-house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Are you looking for tools or software? Basecamp, like is Basecamp?
Yeah, really, anything. Yeah. Basecamp is always a good one, email. I think a lot of people like to, I mean, I don't know, when you're actively managing communities day to day, you know, you're constantly shifting from like you're doing content one day and then you're doing data another day and then you're doing this and then you're doing that. And so I'm always interested in seeing if there are any other tools out there that, you know, might help me a little bit. So those are very good.
Email and telephone.
Yeah, email and telephone. Wonderful. Those tools.
I email everyone, you know, many, many times a day, telephone. Yep. I catch up with our senior moderators every now and then.
Oh, great.
We just started doing this and I think it'll work really well. It is once in a while, I'll get moderators on one specific community, so one of our 36.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be me and maybe three or four moderators on a conference call, and we'll talk for an hour and just to get feedback on what we need to change, what works, what they want to experiment with, and just to spend an hour, and I think it really makes a big difference. What else do we do? Surveys.
Oh, okay.
We'll send out an annual survey that is short, and it just, we ask all of our members, maybe just two questions. What community are you on? What do you like? What do you think should be improved? Mm. And we read them all, and we get a general sense, and then there's some really good ideas, and then we just try a lot of different things out.
Great.
Yeah, I wish we were more strategic, but it's just trial and error.
Sometimes that's what works the best, you know? I think it's very easy to overthink and completely over-engineer things. And it's very, very, especially with all the technology available, you know, the different platforms and features and all the buzzwords, it's so easy to over-engineer what we do as community builders. And I think that a lot of times people really lose sight of it. It all begins with like a need and passion and heart. And there's not a lot of tools that you need to sort of amplify that. Maybe something to keep you organized and something to keep you in communication. But, you know, for the most part, there's not a whole lot of extra stuff that needs to go on.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I would say even it's all about if your community is something that people really care about, genuinely care about, then you can make a lot of mistakes. And
yeah.
You can choose the wrong platform. You can choose the wrong, so many other operations issues can be okay if you just have a community that you care about and your people care about. But if you have a community that nobody cares about and you're trying to build around that, you can, you can optimize all day long and it's not going to make any difference.
Right. Makes sense. Well, we're just about out of time here, but before we go, is there any last sort of words or like parting advice that you have for all of our community builders that are listening today?
I would say passion matters. So find something that you're passionate about, build something around that. And the people that have that same passion for whatever it is are going to find you and they're going to commit to the community. So passion.
Very, very cool. Well, thank you so much, Ben, for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And to everyone out there who is listening, thank you guys. If you like this episode, make sure to visit communitygeek.com/podcast to review the show notes. There you'll find Ben's Twitter handle, a link to Ben's friends, and also links to some of the other resources that we mentioned today. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.